Although,
I'm going to recuse myself from 260.
So hopefully.
What's 260?
It's the independent expenditure.
Oh, okay.
I hope we got enough folks to vote.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt.
And it's an emergency, so we need four votes.
You're right. You're right.
City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Here.
Leonard? Saltzman?
Here.
Sten?
Here.
Potter?
Oh, there you are. I didn't see you. Here. Like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity they are authorized to represent. There are no communications this morning?
Correct.
Okay, do any commissioners wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Does any member of this audience wish to pull any item from the consent agenda?
Commissioner Adams has item 271 to be pulled.
271?
We do?
Mm-hmm. There was a memo yesterday for some amendments. Are they here?
Okay.
About Portland Saturday Market?
I didn't know we were pulling. All right. I trust you.
Okay. We'll pull it and maybe they'll be here.
Okay.
Explain
Thanks,
this.
Carla.
That was 271?
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Okay, please call a vote on the consent agenda.
Adams?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read the 9:30 time certain.
Item 258, accept the Portland Citywide Drug Strategy Report.
In 2006, the City Council passed a resolution to form a drug strategy group for the City of Portland to address the problem of substance abuse in our city. And that they were to consider strategies such as education, policy recommendations, prevention, treatment, enforcement, and other areas. The group sought input from a number of community stakeholders. Both CARSA and Oregon Partnership have been addressing substance abuse in Portland for a number of years. And because of their extensive experience and expertise in the field, Oregon Partnership was selected to take on the development of a strategic, coordinated, and collaborative strategy to address substance abuse, amongst all other things, including prevention, enforcement, and treatment. So today we have Patrick Donaldson and Judy Cushing here. And if you folks would please come forward. This is something that's long overdue for Portland to have a coordinated, collaborative drug strategy for the entire city in all areas. So we appreciate the work that's been done to date. And you folks, proceed as you wish, and please state your name for the record.
Well, good morning, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I'm Patrick Donaldson of Northeast Portland, Beaumont-Wilshire neighborhood, and a business owner in the Hollywood District.
I'm Judy Cushing, president of Oregon Partnership. I reside at 4311 Glacier Lily in Lake Oswego.
Each and every day, our community, like every other community in this state and this nation, and I suspect throughout the world, is confounded and ravaged by the issue of substance abuse. And that term, substance abuse, seems so rarefied. But what it really is, it's about the abuse of prescription drugs. It's about alcoholism. It's about underage drinking. It's about the abuse of illegal substances. It's all of those kinds of things. And each one of us knows from firsthand experience that no family is untouched, no neighborhood is untouched, no business is untouched, and certainly no city like the city of Portland is untouched. We talk a lot in this city about sustainability, but perhaps the most important sustainable element in our community is us as people. And people who are substance abusers are certainly limited in sustaining their own lives or the longevity of that life. And this citywide drug-free strategy is something that is one in a series of initiatives that have taken place in recent years as well as over a longer period of time that will be counted as one of those important days where we as a city move forward, not in trying to have this debate between false choices about either or, but how we as a community at all levels, from the various lowest levels of our community to the very highest levels of the community, all of which are affected by substance abuse, can get their arms around this and use what is uniquely Portland in addressing this issue. It's our assessment from our study that has been done that cities have gotten to this issue of looking at someone else as the source and the solution to the problem about substance abuse. And really what it begins with is with us. And that if you look at how Portland does business, whether it be at the Office of Neighborhood Involvement or the business associations or all the things in between, is that that's where the problem is most directly going to be impacted. Now, today we have the gift of 45 minutes, but we're going to give you, hopefully, the gift of time by constricting our remarks and our testimony to about 30 minutes. You have some material that we've handed out. To give you an overview of that, Judy is going to talk about the history of the organizations that are here before you today and how it sets the stage for the drug strategy. We have a PowerPoint that we're going to go through pretty quickly. Because this document is not the end-all document. In fact, it's an organic living document. I'm sure it's going to evolve as communities start asserting their elements of input. Then we're going to have some brief remarks and testimony from a number of people from our community in the prevention, treatment, recovery, and regulatory and law enforcement community to give you a sampling of how it's not one or the other that's important, but that all four of those elements working in consort with each other create a community that is sustainable and is drug-free. So we'll turn this over to Judy now to talk about
a little history about the strategy and about CARSA in general. In 2003, the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy contacted us. Portland had been selected as one of the major city in the Major Cities Initiative, which was to look at the major cities across the country and how they were dealing with substance abuse issues. It was their understanding that cities were really challenged by the drug issue, and a lot of cities were struggling with how to collectively bring people together to address it. We convened a group of leaders from across the community. It was a pretty exciting and high-energy day. The sectors were diverse. They decided to form their own coalition, and they decided to call themselves CARSA, CARSA Community Action to Reduce Substance Abuse. Oregon Partnership facilitated the process without resources. We decided that really without the Regional Drug Initiative, which had been here in Portland for a decade and had gone away about 5 years previous to that, we really didn't have a collective, coordinated group of community leaders looking at substance abuse issues across all sectors. So things moved forward. The group was dynamic. They looked and launched Meth Watch, which you probably remember, as an effort to help retailers understand the problems of oversale and theft of precursor products like Sudafed regarding the meth issue. The group convened the Portland Meth Summit, which was held in 2005. They looked at public education and awareness to try to build a common understanding or begin to build a common understanding for the public about the issues, and Oregon Partnership then published the first Portland profile. CARSA was also very instrumental in testifying before the Oregon Pharmacy Board and in advocating on the issues of for the meth bill, which was passed in 2006. All of this began to evolve, and Oregon Partnership applied for a federal grant for Portland that would bring a small amount of resources to Portland to continue facilitating this process. It was through the Drug-Free Communities Grant Program out of the Office of National Drug Control Policy. That grant was received and is continuing to fund and support a bit of CARSA's efforts here. As time has evolved, it was very, very clear that we really needed to have a diverse group of leaders from all sectors of the community who will sign on formally to be part of CARSA's Leadership Council. We invited Patrick Donaldson to chair that group, and today CARSA's Leadership Council is made up of who's who's of Portland leaderships across sectors and is adding youth to its council in the next month. That gives you a little bit of a background of how CARSA came to be. A couple of years ago, the Office of National Drug Control Policy asked CARSA to really take a look at developing a drug strategy, and it was at that time that things began to move forward, and you unanimously adopted the resolution to move forward with the Portland Drug Strategy. So here we are today. This drug strategy is just the beginning. It will be a living document. Nothing is set in stone. This is a result of collaboration of leaders from across the community that culminated in a December 5th meeting where 40 leaders came forth with the major elements of this strategy.
The PowerPoint presentation that I indicated will go through here, but I think it's very important, particularly as we talk about the focus and the emphasis that I want to put, is to build and mobilize a comprehensive community-wide social movement, emphasis to social movement, to reduce substance abuse through a broad-based grassroots mobilization of citizens, treatment providers, government officials, faith communities, business leaders, and others. As I mentioned earlier, the issue of substance abuse leaves no one untouched. We are all in this together. What has historically happened is it's always been from above down. Portland is unique in the fact that where good public policy is made is when it bubbles up from below, i.e. at the very grassroots level. And our sense is that, just to digress, is that when you think about a small business person in this community who has 17 employees, they don't have an HR director. They don't have an employee assistance program. But they certainly have substance abuse within that population of employees. And the question is, where do they go? This drug strategy ultimately will allow us to have that broad-based mobilization and grassroots. And it's to coordinate existing city, county, nonprofit, and volunteer efforts. There's a lot of competition for limited resources. And the question is, as a fiscal conservative, that I would always ask is, are we spending the money that we do have wisely enough? And are we giving everybody an opportunity to work together to leverage those dollars even further? And then we can have the discussion about, do we have sufficient resource in this community when confronted with a harsh reality of underage drinking, as an example? And if we don't, then how are we going to go get that resource to apply it here in the community? Okay. Some of the elements of the strategy that we indicate here, pretty simple, straightforward. Every time a police officer arrests an individual in this community, in fact, the average in-custody arrest, I think, for a Portland police officer is like 6 or 7 for any given 10-day period of time. Some portion of those people are, in fact, substance abusers. And the question is, what are we doing with them? Are we re-arresting them? Are we giving an opportunity to then provide services to help break that cycle and ultimately create a sustainable citizen of our community again? Development and enforcement of laws and regulations, the use of area-wide media. In fact, Pete Schulberg will be talking a little bit later during the testimony about how we plan to leverage the power of neighborhood newsletters and business district newsletters, as well as the normal communications that we all engage in with TV, radio, and print. The use of a diverse base of long-term stable funding, that's something that's very much of our concern, and we look forward to taking a lot of our fellow citizens down to Salem next year to have a conversation about that. Quality improvement processes to make sure that the treatment that we're providing to people in prevention strategies are, in fact, measurable and that we can all agree makes sense. Supporting our neighborhood associations. If I'm a neighbor of Beaumont-Wilshire and I've got a substance abuse problem on my streets or in my neighborhood, should my neighborhood association be part of the solution to that? Neighbors helping neighbors is a fundamental element of this. And as Judy mentioned earlier, when we started looking around, we realized that the Oregon Partnership and CARSA had one of the most essential elements missing from it, and that is the youth. That's where most of us get exposed to substances that we ultimately grow up abusing. And perhaps that this becomes an element of the youth, particularly for the Metropolitan Youth Commission, or what it's now currently called, to start getting really sinking their teeth into it. And out of the mouths of babes, we'll have some testimony today from a student at Grant High School who will sort of amplify and break through the denial that I suspect all of us are about substance abuse in our communities. And partnering with the broad-based business community, not only the established business organizations and the neighborhood business districts, but also all those vertical groups that are out there that serve very special types of businesses or business owners. So those are sort of a highlight of some of those.
There are 6 major sectors of focus for the drug strategy: prevention, treatment, regulation and law enforcement, public education and media, financial support, and evaluation, the all-important evaluation. As we move forward in presenting this morning, we want to make it very, very clear. There are some excellent things going on in Portland, some tremendous efforts by citizens, by leaders, by neighborhoods, by organizations, and by our public entities. However, what we were observing is that so many of those efforts go unconnected. They're working on good things, but they don't necessarily know what each is doing. So one of the primary goals of this strategy is to facilitate the coming together of the efforts across Portland to coordinate, develop synergy across those efforts, and an understanding, common data points, and some commonality among their goals. Obviously, working with schools is incredibly important, and we're already, CARSA is already working with the Portland Public Schools, and we've been working with Gresham and other schools as well, to look at how health curriculum is embedded in their K through 12 education programs, something that has been sorely missing. Also, trying to change the culture and social norms around the alcohol, use of alcohol and other drugs by creating a community education program that Pete will speak to a little later on, and increasing the diverse participation of youth, parents, business leaders, faith community leaders, and citizen activists. Treatment is an essential element in this strategy. We must improve access to treatment for everyone and treatment on demand. We must improve the rate of retention of users of our treatment services, and certainly efforts of the county to look at WAPATO and other opportunities to increase treatment for those who really need it and those in our correction system is another piece of this. And develop a plan to provide a single integrated system of services to really meet the individual's needs, including all of the things listed on this particular PowerPoint slide.
Earlier we talked about the false choices that we all sort of get confronted with. It's either or, that somehow some people believe that it's a genetic predisposition for substance abuse. Other people believe that it's a failure of the soul or the person. We believe that's a wasted argument. And that same thing sort of plays out itself with the issue about treatment, prevention, recovery, and this thing called enforcement and regulation. Our belief is all four of those things together work very well. Regulation and enforcement is critical. If in my neighborhood I see somebody who is selling drugs to my neighbors or myself or my children, yes, I want to deal with that issue through prevention, treatment, and recovery, but the reality is law enforcement helps us take that dealer off the street so that recovery, prevention, and treatment all can flourish within that environment. And so we've been talking more about that. And the choices that we all make as a community about voting yes or no or signing petitions for various kinds of initiatives that may expand opportunities for people to have access to substances which they may, in fact, abuse accordingly. Another element of this is public education and media support. We think that a dollar spent on certain kind of outreach can go much farther than a dollar spent in other certain fashions, and we think that public education and media, and Pete Schulberg will a little bit later on talk about that, somebody who you all know through his work in print, TV, and radio, but who has worked for the Oregon Partnership now for quite some time, and as you know, he's regularly on the news talking about the decisions that businesses make and people make with regards to advertising and other kinds of things, and the sort of the slow simmering of people being pulled into the world of abuse. Also, financial support. I mentioned this earlier. As a fiscal conservative, I have to ask myself the question, do the money that we currently have, is it being spent wisely? And there ought to be a consensus within our community that that is the case, and if not, then we need to make sure that it is. Secondly, the question is, do we have sufficient resources? Have we leveraged resources amongst the various providers? Have we all stepped up, so to speak? And if not, then the question is that something that we value to the point that we are going to have to go find additional resources to do this through leverage or additional resources? And that's going to be an interesting conversation, as we can well imagine.
Of critical importance to this effort, as in any effort, is evaluation of the impact of the work that is being done. This will be absolutely critical, and our intent is to collaborate with OHSU, which we already do through their methamphetamine awareness research project and their Portland Alcohol Research Center, along with PSU, Multnomah County, and other entities to develop an outcome evaluation plan that sets benchmarks, collects consistent data, and some new data that maybe we haven't been able to mine as of yet. That will give us a starting point and a way to measure whether the efforts outlined in the strategy that are going to be bubbling up from the neighborhoods are actually working. That's incredibly important, not only for you as our city's leaders, but for our citizens who are impacted and also paying for the effort as well.
If fact, you know, Judy mentioned earlier about working with the Portland Public Schools and other school districts. One of the things that we've discovered, and as a parent, I was surprised as I got involved as a volunteer in this, to find out that we have not made a covenant between ourselves as a community and the educational community and our children. That if you're a fifth grader in Portland, Oregon, going to any school, whether it be a charter school, a home school, or one of the school districts within Portland, there is no guarantee that you will be exposed to the issues of substance abuse in a common, consistent fashion that reflects the values of this community. And that, through the evaluation process, will be fleshed out in more detail. And with regard to strategic direction and inquiry, what we would say is that as we've talked to the various stakeholders for the last couple of months about this, there is a new excitement about the fact that we may be, as a community, breaking through the logjam of the false choice of either or, and instead there's a sense that we can do something different here. Tomorrow, the National Drug Czar, John Walters, will be in town. We're hopeful that the press will have an opportunity to ask him questions about what makes Portland unique when it comes to preventing and treating and recovering and enforcing issues about substance abuse and illegal substances. But as you talk to people, and what this strategy represents is an opportunity to leverage all of the things that make Portland unique, whether it be work or schools or neighborhoods or place of worship or libraries or parks or any of the things that are in the individual portfolios of each of you. How do we leverage that to say that we're there as a community to help sustain you and this larger issue of sustaining the community? How do we integrate those services in a user-friendly fashion and destigmatize these issues? That instead, if we had a public health crisis of 100,000 people in this city who were dealing with, say, influenza, I suspect we would get up off our rear ends and do something about it. And this is exactly the same thing. But as we all know, substance abuse is something that we don't deal with. We don't deal with it at Thanksgiving when Uncle John presents himself at the family gathering under the substantial influence of alcohol. We don't deal with mom is abusing prescription drugs. We don't deal with it with Johnny, who is smoking weed because it's not as because mom and dad always have their cocktail. How to break through those things and stop dealing with the false choices. And I would leave you with this comment about our PowerPoint, and that alcohol and drug issues affect all of us in profound ways that sometimes are identified and sometimes are not. And this is the opportunity for our city, the city that works, to start dealing with this in a way that's not threatening and is effective. Now, that takes up the formal portion of our presentation. We'd certainly entertain any questions from you, and then at the end of that, we could certainly, we have several people who would like to give testimony from each of these various elements of our community.
Questions, commissioners?
Well, first off, I think this is an excellent presentation and a very robust and well-rounded strategy. What's your, and I got a sense from your presentation of sort of your hopes. What, moving forward, what is your biggest fear? What are you worried about the most? What are the barriers that might stand in the way to realizing the vision of this strategy?
One of our biggest fears is that the public won't understand the seriousness and the urgency of this issue. It's not a sexy issue. It's not an issue that people like to talk about, but it does impact all of us. And if we can begin to move the needle on underage drinking, on safety in our neighborhoods, on child abuse, on teen pregnancy, on prescription abuse, we will have impacted Portland dramatically. Now, do we think this will happen overnight? Not in the least. But if we're able to bring the collective power and passion and resources of our public entities, you as leaders of the city, our county leaders, our faith leaders, our school leaders, our citizens, and our business leaders, and believe me, there are a lot of business leaders very invested and concerned about this issue. You will have done something that is groundbreaking for Portland. Our biggest concern is that the public won't quite get the urgency of the matter.
In the next, let's say, year, what would give you faith or comfort or a sense of momentum? What are the few top things that you would like to have seen us accomplish within the next 12 months?
That we get a call from the vice president of a neighborhood association and says, I want to be at the table from whatever the neighborhood association is, or from a business owner in St. John's who says, I don't know if this is going to be the vehicle by which I can deal with the challenge of substance abuse in my workplace, but I want to be involved. You know, back to your comment, Commissioner, about what would be the hardest, you know, the hardest thing to face. I think about some of the people I've met who are in recovery, and I think to myself, do we as a community, ostensibly clear-eyed and sober, have what it takes to deliver on this as we expect people who are struggling with substance abuse? We expect them to get up every day and live a clean and sober life. The least we can do, and that's what I'm frightened of, is sort of what Judy was talking about, is do we have the ability of getting up every day and doing what needs to be done so that sobriety for those people can flourish? So that's what I'm worried about. But my markers of success are that, once again, what makes Portland unique is that people are going to say, I want to be on this because I see that this is something different than the false choices we've always had to deal with in the past.
Shortly here, you'll hear from a young leader in Portland, from Portland. It is really the youth voice that must be amplified on this issue. And if the adults in our community aren't willing, able, and ready to stand behind our young leaders who say this is really, really an important and critical issue that most adults don't really have a clue about, then we're in trouble. I have confidence in Portland, and I'm passionate about the way Portlanders are willing to take on issues around the environment, et cetera. So I'm very optimistic.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Just a couple of highlights about who will be having speak before us, and I'm not sure how they're going to come up three at a time, I suspect. Caitlin Laval, who is a senior at Grant High School, who will bring the voice of youth. Joanne Fuller with Multnomah County, who, Joanne, you'll have to give us your full official title, but czarina of all things.
Alcohol and drugs.
Pete Schulberg will be talking. We also have John Brooks with Drugs and Vice of the Portland Police Bureau and Mike Krantz with ROCN, Regional Organized Crime and Narcotics. And Gary Cobb, who is with the Recovery Association in Portland, was going to be there, but has a conflict and can't make it. But
he wanted to go on record that RAP, the Recovery Association Project, is actively involved in CARSA, is very passionate about this issue, and urges you to adopt and support the strategy. So with that, we will invite Caitlin and Pete and Joanne Fuller to come forward.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, would you please state your name for the record?
Good morning, Mr. Mayor and members of council. My name is Caitlin LaView, senior at Grant High School. So when Judy Cushing and our other guest speakers talk about how the adults and the public don't understand the drug problem going on in the youth, they're completely correct. It's a lot worse than anyone can imagine. Each school has its specific drug problems. My school specifically, I see ecstasy everywhere and marijuana and alcohol all combined. You go to Lincoln and you've got some cocaine and some heroin use. Everywhere are drugs. They're in our streets, in our homes, and they're in the schools. We don't just have older people selling them. We have the teenagers that are also getting a hold of them and selling them for their own uses. I was listening to one of the others in the seats talking about how if there's a drug problem in your neighborhood, you don't just put your neighbor in treatment and hope that that takes care of it. You have to get rid of the drug problem itself. But in order to do that, I think it's not just about taking the advertisements out of TV and out of the news and out of the music videos and getting them away from the teenagers. I think it's about the education. We don't have enough education. The education at the schools is pretty much don't do drugs. They're bad for you. You'll die. They don't give a background of what will happen to you if you engage in these, in using all of these drugs. They don't tell you what it'll do to your life, what it'll do to your family, what it'll do to your health, and that it will affect the longevity of your life and will affect you supporting yourself and others around you. When we have our counselors at school, they don't just, they don't talk to everyone. They limit their ideas of who are using and abusing drugs and alcohol and all the other substances to the kids that you would normally see abusing them. But it's not just about that. It's from the jock you know, that's in your fifth period English class to the boy that lives next to you. Everyone is using them. Each student is running wild with all of these problems. We all have our own little stress to deal with, and this is how they let it out. We don't have enough support in our school systems or in our homes. Their topic of drugs and alcohol use is a completely taboo topic. No one really wants to talk about it because it just shouldn't exist. But what people don't know is how easy it is to obtain drugs and alcohol. You can get it, you know, next door to in the apartment next to you. You know, in the apartment below where you have the 25-year-olds who stay up late and party. Adults have this naive and kind of innocent view that it just doesn't exist for us teenagers, that we don't participate and it's not in every party, or it's, you know, we don't sit next to us in our, you know, night school classes and listen to the girl behind us talk about how she got high last night. And I think to really make a difference, we have to break through that, and we have to make it so aware that it is such a large problem that no one really realizes. It's every day. It's such a problem. And, you know, it's they're right. It does affect everyone, whether it's us using them ourselves or it's in our parents or our friends or our teachers, for that matter. We don't just start by, you know, removing all of it, and this isn't going to happen overnight. It's going to take a long process, but I think if we're going to start with it, we want to target the youth. We want to make it better, and we want to show the idea that, you know, it's okay to admit that you're doing these things, because a lot of teenagers these days, when they're doing and using and abusing substances, they're terrified to admit it because it'll make them wrong, it'll make them dirty, it'll say that they're doing something wrong and bad and they'll get in trouble. And yeah, it's illegal and there are a lot of reasons why you shouldn't, but a lot of people are too scared to say anything. And I think if we lessen that fear, we'll have a lot more people coming out and asking for help when they realize that they have a problem.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, or Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Joanne Fuller from Multnomah County. I'm the director of the Department of County Human Services. And the County Human Services Department is really the place in the county where prevention efforts and treatment for people who aren't in the criminal justice system are focused. And I don't know that I have a lot to add. I think that Caitlin has talked so eloquently about what the issues are, that with the challenges that we face out there, when we think about what's it going to take to prevent the generation that she represents from getting deeply involved in substance abuse to the point of addiction, and then really being unable to be fully participating citizens in our community. And so I think that all I can say is that we need to continue to support. We need the support of this strategy. It needs to be integrated efforts. It can't just be, enforcement isn't going to just fix this. Treatment isn't just going to fix this. Prevention isn't just going to fix this. It's got to be a combined effort. It's got to be owned by more than the government. As government officials and as a government employee and a public servant, we can't fix this alone. It has to be owned by the community, and it has to be owned by many sectors of the community. It has to be owned by businesses and families, by churches, neighborhood groups. Schools have to deal with the issues that are happening on the schools. And so we really need to look at this in a very comprehensive and systematic way, instead of just a one-size-fits-all, you know, if we just do one thing, that's going to solve the problem. I think that this strategy fits well with many of the things that the council is already deeply invested in. The Sun Schools effort and the funding that's provided to services through CHIF are all critical parts of preventing kids, giving kids pro-social, appropriate interventions and things to do that are really anti getting involved in drugs, and we know that kids who are engaged in pro-social activities do better in school, have less drug use, and ultimately have more productive lives. And so we're already making some investments there. We're making investments in treatment. The plan to end homelessness, with its focus on low-barrier, low-income housing and the coupling of services to housing, also creates opportunities for people who are already involved in drug abuse, and many of whose lives have been deeply damaged by drug and alcohol abuse, to be able to get their lives together and start afresh. And it also gives families that have been affected by drug and alcohol abuse the opportunity to get into housing and treatment and get their lives together as well. So I think that this strategy fits, it fits Portland, it fits our spirit, it fits what Portland stands for and what Multnomah County stands for, and it really fits with many of the efforts that you are already deeply committed to and have invested in. Thank you.
Question, Commissioner Adams.
How close are we to the goal of developing a plan to provide single integrated system of services that meet individual needs to include assessment, detox, treatment, recovery, medical, mental health services?
I think that we have, Commissioner, I think that we have a lot of the components of that plan. And in fact, we have most of that continuum in place for substance abuse. What we don't have is the quantity that we need to be able to get everyone who needs treatment into treatment. And so we've got the elements of we've got detox, we've got outpatient treatment for people who need outpatient, that's the appropriate level. We've got good residential treatment. In the last few years, we've been working with our residential treatment providers to implement better treatment efforts that in research show that they're more effective. And we're working to engage with more culturally specific communities to reach out to a more diverse group of people into getting them into treatment. And we have some aftercare and recovery efforts. And the recovery associates that you heard about earlier, they're very involved in mentorship and the connection of people into treatment. The issue I think we've got is that we still have waiting lists for our treatment, and we still have people who really need to be in treatment who are not able to get into treatment because they don't have insurance. And our system of free, publicly funded treatment for people who don't have insurance is limited.
So what is the waiting list? And the waiting list would be for people who said, I want treatment,
right,
and therefore they sign up for that treatment. What is the waiting list for folks that fall into that category?
The last time we looked at the waiting list, there were about 400 people waiting for residential treatment. Getting into outpatient treatment is easier. Outpatient is less expensive. It's more flexible. Capacity can expand more easily. But residential treatment, which is the most expensive, deepest level of treatment, and which is appropriate for people who are really seriously addicted and have multiple other issues, we've got a waiting list for that.
And has anyone, either from a from an academic point of view or any sort of research done locally, that sort of the cost to society of having such a long waiting list for people that are seeking to deal with their addictions?
The studies have looked basically at what the costs to society are for people who continue to use drugs and alcohol. Don't quote me on the numbers, but it's somewhere in the area of, if you invest a dollar, there's a $5 return in terms of the costs recovered from putting people into treatment. But don't quote me on the total.
And then just the last question, Mayor, I appreciate it, is our presenters talked about their fear that this issue will not be recognized and embraced as a priority among the general public, and this effort is one of many efforts to try to address that. From your professional point of view, do you agree with that assessment that of people not seeing the importance of this problem and that it should be a priority. And from your professional point of view, why is that?
I think it is it's a challenge to get people's attention, and I think that there are a lot of different reasons. One is in our society, there's fairly accepted wide use of some substances, and then other substances are illegal, and yet abuse of alcohol can impair you as deeply as abuse of some other drugs. And yet it's perfectly legal to abuse alcohol in our society. So I think that that creates some cognitive dissonance in our society about where we draw that line and what we consider acceptable use of substances and what we don't. And so we have some artificial ways that we do that, and that I think that makes it people say, well, you know, I drink my cocktail, so it must be okay for that kid to smoke a joint. And that becomes a rationalization for how it is that we draw those lines. That makes it difficult. The other thing is that I think that people have a lot of pressing immediate issues in their lives today. And getting their attention and getting them to think about something that's as deep as this and kind of tackle a problem like this can be very difficult.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So the proposals that the county is looking at with respect to Wapato Jail would include residential treatment? Is that the idea?
Yes. Wapato's a secure facility, so that would be residential treatment.
So it could considerably expand the supply.
Yes.
To do that.
Yeah. Good morning. Pete Schulberg, Communications Director for Oregon Partnership. Thank you for your time and your efforts in this. I've got a tough act to follow. A lot of, frankly, what I was going to say has been said, probably a lot more eloquently than I can say it. But a couple of things, especially Commissioner Adams, some of the points that you alluded to. The conversation about drugs in this country is really about to change. A great example, I just picked up my new Newsweek, the hunt for an addiction vaccine. I don't know about you, but 2 weeks ago, I didn't know such a thing existed. Tonight on the CBS Evening News, there's going to be a story about the dangers of alcoholic energy drinks. 6 months ago, even those of us in the field didn't know these things even existed. I guess what I'm trying to get at is that because of a couple of major reasons, the conversation about drugs in this country, I think, is going through some radical changes. One, because of the advances in medical science, we know so much more about the impact of drugs and alcohol on the underage drain, the brain, the adolescent brain. There are, you know, billions of dollars in money and research being done right now. A lot of it's pointed out in this article, by the way. And parents and communities and members of the city councils all over the country are going to learn more about the effects of drugs on the adolescent brain and on all of us. Not only that, not only the effects of drugs on the effects of the brain, but on ways to deal with addiction. And because of these advances, there's going to be, I think, a lot more information and education bubbling to the surface. I always use the example, talking about public education information, about cigarette smoking in this country. The culture of cigarette smoking has totally changed in a generation. And that's because C. Everett Koop got up there a number of years ago and said it's dangerous, it's hazardous to your health. Because of that, the education information, the various ways we can look and say, you know what, he's right, and here's why. The incidence of cigarette smoking in this country has decreased every single year since that statement by the Surgeon General. You look at what's going on in the schools with such issues as recycling and the greening of our communities. Kids in kindergarten can tell you a lot more about recycling than I probably could. It is just something that's taken over our culture. And in a generation, the image or the culture of cigarette smoking and of recycling and of the environment has totally gone 360 degrees. I think because of these advances and ways we can explain to parents and the public about the dangers of drugs, we've all known for years and years they're illegal and they're coming in illegally and people die from them and people are in treatment. But to actually point and look and say, this is what it does to your teenager. This is what it does to that person's brain. To parents who've said, you know what, I drank as a teenager. I used to go out and get drunk, and look at me. I'm successful. I'm okay. But the fact of the matter is, the science is telling us that if you're drinking as a kid, as a teenager, you have five times the chance of having alcohol and drug problems when you're an adult. Why? It's all physiological. It's all because of the effect on that adolescent brain. The researchers have told us that. It's a slam dunk. And part of the strategy, and Patrick alluded to this, about the public information, why parents aren't caring. Caitlin talked about it. All these kids are doing this in school. The parents, it's really not their fault, but they know it's illegal. They know it isn't, it's good to do. But, you know, they did it. They dabbled in it. They've come out okay. But the more we learn about the effects and about the dangers of this, and the more we get out to the public with the help of the media, and on all levels of the community, I think the better we'll be. So I am hopeful. I think there's some real potential here. And I think, you know, Portland really could be a leader to be at the forefront in this opportunity to get this message out. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, folks. Are there, who else was next? When you speak, please state your name for the record.
My name is Lieutenant John Brooks. I am the lieutenant for the Portland Drugs and Vice Division. Good morning. I am a respecter of your time, so I will just state that the Police Bureau supports this effort and is glad to be a part of it. We realize that we're just one of six pillars that support this. Right now, there's not a lot written about an enforcement aspect, but we already see that there's an invitation to continue those dialogues. So at this point, I will answer any questions that you might have.
Questions for the lieutenant? Go ahead.
Counsel, my name is Sergeant Mike Krantz. I'm a police officer with the City of Portland, and I'm assigned as a group supervisor to the Regional Organized Crime and Narcotics Task Force. And along the same lines, Lieutenant Brooks, I'm very happy to be a participant of this, and I'd like to continue learning about this and being a participant at the table. The one thing that I would like to maybe point out is that Portland is a leader in this, as being a participant in ROC, and the region is the four counties that surround Multnomah County. We include Washington, Clackamas, Columbia as part of our service areas, and this doesn't exist that I see anywhere else in our enforcement efforts and where we have options to assist people when people ask us for treatment. And this would potentially make Portland a leader in the metro area and in the nation and state, and I'm happy to see this coming. And I'd entertain any questions you might have on the law enforcement aspect.
Questions? Thank you, folks, very much for coming. Is that all of the folks signed up? Is there a sign-up sheet on this?
We have one person signed up, Teresa Teeter.
Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
I'm Teresa Teeter, downtown citizen advocate, homeless, et cetera. Excuse me. I've read through most of the report already today, and I agree with every aspect of it. There's some things I'd like to point out. What with trying to impact drug and alcohol intervention, prevention, et cetera, I'd like to see some higher city policies created, like with the sales of alcohol in downtown at these little mom-and-pop grocery marts where people are just going in and buying one bottle of booze and going around the corner and drinking it, and then hour after hour, and usually at the first of the month when everybody gets their checks. You've got between that and the major drug crime parts in downtown, I was glad to see the officers were here from the Portland Police Bureau. They understand the issues over in Chinatown and we're going to be cleaning up that area with creating the access area and stuff later on this week and everything, creating the budgets for all that. So I'm hoping some of the money from these folks are going to be able to help supply beds in this new area and stuff. And the other issue I kind of almost hit at last week was we do need to have a mayor's youth council. You do, as they've outlined in their brochure today, their presentation, maybe with the incoming new mayor. I've constantly stated this throughout the years of sitting here, that you need youth council from each high school, each junior high, grade school area, the best of their class or something, to come in and have these discussions and then go out and have events at their schools, have council attend them, et cetera, you know, get this organized. And then these kids can have their meetings at their school on how to tackle some of the drug use issues and alcoholism and homelessness at their schools, and then come back and present reports to you folks. And this is in their request today, too. So this is very, very well written. I'm glad to see all the players at the table. I'm kind of concerned I didn't see anybody from Sisters of Road Cafe in on the title page of all the people participating, because the participants at Sisters of the Road Cafe, some of those clients do cause some of this problem in the streets. And I'm thinking if Sisters of the Road Cafe was on the table, they could go back and have meetings and during their trainings and start addressing the issue quite a bit with their participants of their group. Because if you're going to participate in the prevention and intervention, et cetera, then you also need to be the educator of stopping it as well. Thank you.
Teresa, for your information, the Portland Multnomah Youth Commission serves as an advocate to the entire city council, and they provide us with information, and they are represented by most of the schools in Portland.
Okay, but they've asked in their thing today that there should be more youth input from the schools, so I don't believe it covers that same topic that you just referred to, but I understand what you're saying. Thank you.
That's all who signed up.
Any further questions from the commissioners? It's a report. I need a motion and a second.
So moved.
Second.
Please call the vote.
Adams.
Thank you very much for your work. Really appreciate it. I'm committed to being a good partner and helping you achieve the goals that you've set forth. So I'm very happy to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Well, thank you for your efforts, and you know, certainly we want to see this strategy succeed, and I know that the challenges are daunting because so many of them are interwoven into how we react in the family unit, how we react in a community setting, and you know. But one thing can be said without any doubt, that we need to have more treatment resources. All of this is for naught if there's not a way for a person to really have a chance to be substance free, and until those opportunities are more widespread through greater access at WAPIDO, greater access, greater insurance coverage, and I know you're going to continue to plug away at those issues systematically, so I appreciate your efforts. Aye.
Stan.
Well, this is very proactive, and I think it's a good piece of work. I really appreciate it. I mean, I think it'd be very easy to give up to some extent. I mean, I think had a similar kind of effort on homelessness the last few years, where we said, you know, I mean, we basically come to accept that homelessness is just part of things rather than trying to take it on. I think Joanne made that link. And I think this is the same kind of thing, and I appreciate it. I'm very glad to hear, Pete, you say, you know, sort of the sense that you think this conversation is going to change. I mean, I think good-minded people have worked at this for a long time, but clearly the war on drugs and just say no strategy is a failure. It doesn't work to just do those two things. We've got to have treatment, and we've also got to talk to the youth, I think, as your person did. A little more realistically, I think that the idea that youth are never going to try drugs is not proven out by history. And so it has to be more of a conversation of, okay, if you do try this, here's what's going to happen, and working through that. And so, you know, I think this is really, it's a pleasure to be able to talk about these issues. And to some extent, I mean, I even remember in the short time that I've been on the council, but 12 years ago, you know, it was hard to talk about anything other than a drug-free zone that was going to move the drugs out. And now that didn't work, by the way. and Mayor Potter and Commissioner Leonard have led a charge to say, we're not going to do a drug-free zone, but we're going to focus drug treatment efforts and other strategies into those areas. And so I think it's not that one side's right or wrong. I mean, we certainly need to have law enforcement, and we certainly need to show people the dangers, but I think we also have to meet people where they are. And I see this strategy as being a whole smart mix of those things. So I appreciate it, and look forward to seeing that conversation change. Thanks in large part to your work. Aye.
Water.
Well, I want to thank CARSA and the Oregon Partnership and all the folks who testified. And Caitlin, I really appreciate your testimony. Letting the adult population know that schools are more than just about education, that there's a lot of things going on there that need to be addressed. And I think that a salient point was made about the fact that we've got to have a social movement in this community, in this country. There's a tolerance for drugs of all types that I think needs to change, and that we need to change the culture in which drugs flourish. And I think that all of us contribute in one way or the other, either to the prevention or to the enabling of that kind of culture and alcohol and drugs. And so I really appreciate this. I remember when the Regional Drug Initiative went away, and I was wondering what would follow in its place. And I'm really pleased that this particular strategy does require a collaboration and does require communication and does require cooperation between the different parties so that we do it as a united front, because no single strategy will fix this problem. But we can't do it by ourselves. We need the people of Portland to help us. And without their help, the effects will only be limited instead of what we really want, and that's a drug-free Portland. So thank you, folks, very much. Really appreciate it. And again, Caitlin, thank you. I vote aye.